From WFPL News, this is a news special on the pending hospital merger involving the University of Louisville Hospital, Catholic Health Initiatives, and Jewish Hospital and St. Mary's Healthcare. I'm Rick Howlett. Our guests today are Dr. James Taylor, President and CEO of University of Louisville Hospital, David Laird, President and CEO of Jewish Hospital and St. Mary's Healthcare, and Dr. Dan Varga, Chief Medical Officer at St. Joseph Health System, representing Catholic Health Initiatives. Welcome, one and all.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for joining us today. Our guests will be questioned by WFPL News Director Gabe Bullard, and we also welcome your participation. The phone number is 502-814-TALK. That's 502-814-8255, or toll-free, 1-877-814-TALK. That's 1-877-814-8255. You can also email us at news@WFPL.org. Send us a tweet at WFPL News or reach us through our Facebook account. Now here's Gabe Bullard.
All right. I'd like to start. First of all, thanks again for being here. But Dr. Taylor, I'd like to start with you. You've said that this merger between the three entities is absolutely necessary for University Hospital. Why is that?
Well, I've said that this is a necessity, not an alternative to the status quo. The status quo is not an alternative going forward. We've said that because as we have looked with our board at our future, we understand that because we are an organization that is not particularly attractive to investors, that we can't borrow the money we need to keep ourselves up or to advance. We understand because of our size and our financial condition, we have 20 to 25% of the people who come to our facility don't pay us. So we are not able to generate the money from operations to keep ourselves up. So our future is decline unless we have a partner who can bring together the capital that we need and can allow us to continue to do what we're there to do, care for the underserved, to serve as the major teaching hospital of the University of Louisville School of Medicine, and to meet special healthcare needs of the community like the trauma center and the burn unit.
What other options were explored before this merger was entered into?
We in the time frame of 2007-2008, our board went through a careful strategic process of looking at our options, and that's when we understood that by ourselves we would not be able to continue to do what this community asked us to do. So we began to understand that we needed a partner. We looked at available organizations. We looked at our history with them, and it was clear that the organization that was closest to us and to the university, for which we are operational support, was Jewish St. Mary's. So we began a conversation with Jewish St. Mary's that by the end of 2009, we were close to an agreement on how we would work together. At that time, CHI and St. Joseph came to us and said, let's think about this rather than a Louisville only activity. Let's think about what we could do for the people of the Commonwealth if we did this statewide. And so in 2010 and almost now through 2011, we've been exploring and finally committing to coming together to serve the needs of the people of the state.
Would a merger between just U of L Hospital and Jewish St. Mary's work?
In my opinion, and I'll let David Laird speak for his organization, but both of us find ourselves in a position where we are not able to generate the amount of capital needed to keep ourselves up and to make the investments that we're required to make by federal healthcare changes, such as information systems. There's tremendous tens of millions of dollars just in information systems that between us we will have to make. And speaking for my institution, we don't have the ability to do that through internally generated funds.
No question about it. Our operations are solvent, just as the university is, a university medical center is. However, when one looks at funding the IT requirements for the Affordable Care Act, it's going to require a substantial amount of money, and we don't have the cash reserves nor the ability to borrow the money required to sink into the information technologies.
So neither entity would be able to survive even if you had just merged you two together?
We could have limped along, and I think the university could have done the same thing. But if you try to create some economies of scale by merging, which we believe exist, we think there are savings, while at the same time there is an infusion of incremental capital from CHI.
Well, Dr. Varga, I'd like to turn to you. How is it that that your system is operating so well and doesn't have the same concerns that the others do?
Well, first of all, we do have the same concerns. I think every health system in this era right now is confronted with the reality of declining margins that probably aren't going to change significantly going forward, and the real issue of capital capacity and capital demand, whether you're talking about IT, new technology development, and particularly in the state of Kentucky, the expense of physician workforce development, whether you're talking about funding faculty or whether you're talking about getting a primary care physician to show up in Floyd County, Kentucky. The expense of that is very significant. And one of the things that we hope to do with the merger is to be actually a lot more sensible and deliberate about how we develop and deploy physician resources and other caregivers across the Commonwealth so that we can be in a position to expand access at a time when I think otherwise we'd be really forced to contract access.
What's the structure of the merged entity going to be?
Well, there will be a governance that will be statewide, a board of, I think, 90% Kentucky people. It will be a fiduciary board, meaning that it has responsibility for the statewide network. It'll be an 18-member board. A lot has been said about the composition of that board. 10 of those 18 will be nominated by CHI, 4 by Jewish St. Mary's, and 4 by the university. So it's a fiduciary Kentucky-based board. And then the various healthcare systems of St. Joe's, Jewish St. Mary's University, will in effect operate as a common organization. Within Louisville, within the Academic Medical Center, we will operate what we now know as University, the Brown Cancer Center, Jewish, and Fraser as one teaching hospital. So for the university's perspective, it doubles the size of the teaching hospital and allows us to expand, for instance, the size of our education programs to try to meet some of the needs that Dr. Varga talked about.
And what sort of there have been reports that CHI will have an ownership stake in this. How is that going to work? Who will be the owner of this entity?
It is a not-for-profit organization, and like all not-for-profits, there aren't owners. What there is in this is a contribution of assets. And so based on what assets are contributed by CHI or Jewish St. Mary's or University Medical Center, there will be an equity interest. But that interest is only important, frankly, if the organization comes apart, because that's the way the distributions of the assets would happen. And none of us are doing this to have it come apart.
And speaking of these assets, there's this $200 million that's going to be infused in, correct?
Actually, the number is $320 million that CHI is putting in. $200 million of that is designated for the Academic Medical Center in Louisville.
And where's that money coming from?
That actually is part of the asset contribution of Catholic Health Initiatives. So Catholic Health Initiatives' stake in the new statewide network includes its current 25% equity stake in Jewish St. Mary's, its 100% stake in the St. Joseph Health System, plus the incremental $325 million of cash infusion. So that's all of those together comprise the CHI inputs to the KSN.
And is that coming out of CHI, just the coffers already, out of
Correct.
Surpluses that have been run?
That's,
so there's no financing happening?
No.
No bonds being issued?
No.
And how will that money end up being spent, that the $200 million going to academics?
Carefully.
Carefully and directed towards the major needs of the people of our state.
And I think one other thing that's important is around that investment is that the investment, as Dr. Taylor just said, will really be to try to address specific opportunities the university sees, like, for example, the achievement of NCI designation in the Cancer Center, as well as expanding, say, for example, primary care access in Greater Louisville, but also with an eye towards making the Academic Medical Center a platform which can then be deployed broadly across the state.
And there have been a lot of concerns over care, over exactly how this is going to all pan out, a lot of questions over the management structure and all that that have been asked over the past year since this has been announced, and there haven't always been a lot of answers. There are a lot of people, even when we announced that we were preparing this show, people asking even very basic questions about this. It seems like that hasn't always been communicated, and at some point, as we've seen with Jefferson County Attorney Mike O'Connell filing a lawsuit, that certain things are being kept under wraps. Why is there this level of secrecy around this deal?
I would beg to differ that there's been secrecy. We've appeared on numerous shows like this. We've been in public forums. We've been before legislative committees. We've sat with the governor. To say that there's secrecy is simply unfair. What we haven't done, as most corporations don't do, is to reveal strategic plans, to reveal unfinished decisions. So you ask about the management structure. I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that term, but it is something that is not resolved to date. I talked about the governance structure. We've talked freely about that and described who is going to be ultimately responsible for this new organization. So we don't believe we've been secretive. We believe we've been forthcoming within the terms of what how normal business is carried out by organizations that, after all, live in a competitive world.
And Gabe, another important piece of that is up until the signing of definitive agreements back in June, and even going from June forward until this merger would hopefully close, we're bound, but we have been bound by antitrust considerations to really act as competitors. So when folks say you must have already decided how you're going to run this and how you're going to run that, well, in fact, if we had, we would have run the risk of not only putting the potential merger in jeopardy, but also tripping a lot of adverse events that none of us would have wanted to trip. So to a large extent, most of our operational planning has really only gotten started come July of this year.
But why appeal Attorney General Jack Conway's ruling that the University Medical Center is a public institution, or why not release the documents to Mike O'Connell with this? What are those documents even? I think there's some confusion coming from Mr. O'Connell on that.
Well, we've said publicly that we disagree that we're a public institution. In 2006, the Attorney General found that we were not a public institution when an open records request consideration was made. That is the standing law. The Attorney General Conway's ruling a few months ago is something that the courts will decide whether or not the conditions have changed from 2006 to now. We believe they have not. And if we look at the facts of what constitutes a public institution, the facts are that we don't meet that. I think most of the assertion comes from, and I heard the county attorney say this, that U of L controls University Medical Center. That is simply not true. University Medical Center has a board of trustees that is not controlled by the university. There are not a majority of our members of our board who are university associated, and in fact, they're prohibited from being. So the facts are that we are not controlled by the university. And so as a matter of principle, saying that we're a public institution is something we're not prepared to do. We readily concede, and we're very proud of the fact that we have a public mission. No argument about that. But confusing a public mission with a public institution is a mistake that we're not willing to allow to be made.
Aside from the business dealings acting as competitors, what else might be in these documents? I mean, there's a lot of concern that discussions over specific types of care are these things that you have an obligation to the public to provide this sort of care. There's a concern that documents related to the future of that are being kept secret. And even at some of the meetings, there have been questions and the response is, well, we haven't worked that part out. This is still part of these talks. And I think there's a big concern that that isn't happening more in the open when this is a care that, as you said, you have an obligation to provide to the public.
I think all three of our organizations have track records of providing for the underserved. And we have said publicly, and we will be pleased to be monitored as we go forward, that we are committed to continuing to cover the underserved. CHI, Dr. Varga can talk about their commitment, Jewish St. Mary's, in the same matter. But if you look at the record and you look at the facts, we have served the underserved. And we have said publicly that we will be accountable for doing so going forward.
Collectively, we provide $270 million of charity care every year. And so we think that that is unprecedented and unequaled by any other organization in the state.
Being accountable, does that mean you'll agree to this monitoring that the Board of Health has recommended? They've said that there should be some sort of oversight imposed on the merged entity.
All of us are required to publish community benefit reports every year. So it's already public record as to what we do each year.
But if an oversight structure were to be put in place, this mechanism was the wording that the Board of Health had used, would that be agreeable?
I'm not completely familiar with the Board of Health's ideas about mechanism. But again, we are already accountable as individual organizations for the care we provide to the underserved. And so I don't see any reason why going forward the new organization wouldn't be subject to the same.
Okay, we're going to take our first break. If you have a question or comment for our hospital merger panel, call us at 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255, or toll free 1-877-814-8255. You're listening to a news special on WFPL. This is a WFPL news special on the hospital merger. I'm Rick Howlett, and we're talking with Dr. James Taylor, President and CEO of University of Louisville Hospital, David Laird, President and CEO of Jewish Hospital and St. Mary's Healthcare, and Dr. Dan Varga, Chief Medical Officer at St. Joseph Health System. We welcome your participation, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255, or toll-free, 1-877-814-8255. You can email us at news@wfpl.org. Send us a tweet at WFPL News, or reach us through our Facebook account. Again, here's WFPL's Gabe Bullard.
One thing I want to go to, and that's been a lot of the public focus of this, at least in questions posed from the public and asked to the Board of Health even, was what's going to happen with certain procedures that perhaps aren't allowed under the Catholic Ethical Religious Directives, the ERDs, we can refer to them as. And at first, there was some talk that the merged entity would follow the ERDs. But at the Board of Health forum, was it last month or in October, it was said the attorney, Jennifer Elliott, who's working on this, said that it won't actually be the ERDs in place in University Hospital, that it will be contractual language that's still being put together. Is that the case?
That is the case. But let me let Dr. Varga speak to that.
Certainly within the merger, and within the merger documents, we are very clear that we recognize and respect the heritages of all three of the merging partners, the academic heritage, the Jewish heritage, and the Catholic heritage. And we agree in the merger documents to make sure that we honor and respect those. With respect to the entities within the organization, the currently Catholic organization, so for example, the hospitals of St. Joe Health System, will remain Catholic facilities and will be governed by, as Catholic facilities all are, will be governed by the Catholic Ethical and Religious Directives. The other facilities within the statewide network will not become Catholic. They will continue to express their existing heritages. But in the contract language that consolidates the merger, we will all collectively agree to not perform certain procedures contractually that would put the Catholic hospitals in what's referred to in the ERDs in a position of scandal.
So something that would happen at University Hospital would put a Catholic institution in a position of scandal?
In as much as we're all part of a single corporate entity. So the, as Jim was saying earlier, this is a full asset merger, so we're all in with our assets here. And Catholic Health Initiatives is the majority equity partner in this. So what we're doing within the context of the contracts is saying while the other than Catholic facilities in the merger will not become Catholic, we'll contractually agree to not put the Catholic hospitals in a position of scandal.
So this contract is being driven, is being inspired by the ERDs, by religious doctrine.
Well, somewhat, but so is it being inspired by the academic needs. So is it being inspired by the Jewish heritage of one of the partners. So I think it's not fair to pick out only one. It's, as Dr. Vargas said, respecting the heritages of each organization.
Well, will anything change at St. Joseph's?
No.
So the only changes will happen at Jewish St. Mary's and UMC?
That's correct.
Contractually, we've agreed not to do a very few procedures we're doing today.
And that includes tubal ligations, which are being moved to Baptist Hospital East, correct?
That is correct.
And there have been a lot of criticism surrounding that, specifically that you're moving these procedures to a hospital that is further away for a lot of people to get to.
It depends upon where they live today. The assumption is that they don't live near Baptist. Actually, a great number of them live closer to Baptist than they do University Hospital.
And also, we have done a look at where do the patients come from who go to University Hospital today who are obstetrics patients, and what are their zip codes? Where do the majority of our patients, what are the zip codes in which they live? We've gone, and then we've looked within those zip codes and looked where do the population of people go from each zip code. 30 to 40% of the people in those zip codes, which are our primary zip codes, already go to the East End, to one of the two hospitals there. So to say that we are creating brand new travel patterns is, again, inaccurate. People will have more choice, not just for tubals. So if they want to a normal delivery, people who now deliver with university faculty, University Hospital, will have the option of delivering with university faculty at Baptist Hospital, where many of their neighbors are choosing to go today.
And a lot of the questions, though, that have arisen around this concept, correct me if I'm wrong with this, but if a woman is planning to have a tubal ligation after a cesarean section, those plans are made with her doctor that she will deliver, that cesarean section will be done at Baptist Hospital East. And in the case of an emergency, presumably she would be taken to Baptist Hospital East.
In order to have a tubal ligation after a delivery, there's a requirement in Kentucky law that says that must be given 24 hours in advance. So the emergency tubal ligation post-delivery is not legal.
But if the delivery is an emergency.
Right. And so the way that this would work between a doctor and a patient, which I think is really probably far more the important piece of discussion here, is the doctor and the patient would, as occurs in the vast majority of women who have tubals, would have a discussion many, many months in advance of their delivery and make a decision to say, at the time of delivery, I would like to have a tubal ligation. If that was a normal vaginal delivery, then the tubal ligation would usually be performed the next day or the day after, and that would obviously be something that wouldn't need to be addressed in any other place other than the University of Louisville Hospital. There are vehicles we could get to address that. The problem is you can't predict who's going to have a normal vaginal delivery and who may need to move to an emergency C-section. So basically the way this works from the standpoint of planning is any woman who's going to have a tubal ligation is going to have their delivery, is going to be offered their delivery at a facility other than the University of Louisville Hospital.
Is Baptist Hospital East capable of handling any high-risk children that may be born through cesarean section, any of these high-trauma cases?
There are university faculty who are maternal-fetal medicine, which are high-risk OB doctors, practice at Baptist East today. So the answer is yes. They have an an NIC, or they have a neonatal intensive care unit, one level below what university has. So today there, I think the statistics we've seen, David, were 30 to 50 newborns a year are already being transferred from Baptist East for a higher level of care downtown.
You're listening to a news special on WFPL. We're talking about the pending hospital merger involving University of Louisville Hospital, Catholic Health Initiatives, and Jewish Hospital and St. Mary's Healthcare. We do have some callers lined up here. Let's go to the phone and talk to Jimbo in Pleasureville. Hello, Jimbo. You're on the air. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. We live in Shelby County, and a lot of folks are specifically interested in how the Jewish Hospital of Shelbyville is going to be affected by this merger. And if it is, you know, certain things like the OB clinic is closed, the cancer clinic is closed. I think on a recent day, somebody said there were 12 total patients in the hospital. I think it's really important to have a hospital in a rural area, somewhat rural, like Shelby County and surrounding counties. So how is that going to be affected?
Well, there will be more cash available from CHI. It's all not directed toward just the academic medical center. Only $200 of the $320 million is directed toward the academic medical center, and we hope to make incremental investments in Shelbyville as a result of having more cash available.
And just relative to the whole question of rural access, I think that one of the things that all of the citizens of the Commonwealth should feel reassured by is if you look at the four-year history of the St. Joseph Health System and in the relationship Catholic Health Initiatives has had with that, with our organization. We have hospitals in Martin, Kentucky, London, Kentucky, Berea, Kentucky, and Mount Sterling, Kentucky, and Bardstown, as well as in Lexington. And the commitment of the St. Joseph Health System was not to come together so that we could limit rural access and try to channel as much as we could to Lexington, but rather to try to enhance the services that we had at each of those facilities. And if you look at the history of CHI in Kentucky, there's a new hospital that just opened in Mount Sterling, new hospital that just opened in London, probably within the last 4 to 5 years, a new hospital that's opened in Bardstown, Flaget Memorial. So CHI has a long history of a very strong commitment to not just supporting, but growing and nurturing services in rural communities.
502-814-8255 is our number, or 1-877-814-8255, toll free. Let's go to another call here, and Lynn in Louisville. Hello, Lynn, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to thank each one of you and your respective organizations for, first of all, being innovative in addressing the health care needs of people in a relatively unhealthy state. But my question is this. My son is a medical school student, and it seems to me from what I'm hearing you say that merger will create an expanded learning opportunity for him and for other students, and at the same time provide access to people in rural areas of Kentucky where there is a shortage of physicians. Do you agree, and can you address that question?
Lynn, couldn't agree more. There's a couple things about the University of Louisville School of Medicine that are fairly unique. The first is that the University of Louisville Medical School budget is only about 7 or 8% funded through state funds. So the University of Louisville depends upon its relationships with partners, the revenue generated by the faculty and their clinical practices, and the money that comes from the support of its hospital partners like Norton, Cosair, University of Louisville Hospital, and Jewish. And all of those community-based teaching partners or community-based partners have been integral to the teaching of medical students and residents for going on 40, 50 years. As we sit here in the state of Kentucky today, we have about a 2,500 physician shortage. And to really get folks in the state to want to be in medicine, want to participate in meeting the healthcare needs of the Commonwealth, we have to actually get those folks out in the community so they can see how their opportunities might be able to be developed over the long haul. We would envision over the course of the merger that University of Louisville students, faculty, residents, et cetera, would take advantage of teaching sites all across the state of Kentucky, including Lexington and all of the rural communities that the St. Joe system serves. And that can only help in terms of helping us increase the physician pipeline and really try to address the shortages we have today.
Lynn, thanks for your call. Let's stay in Louisville and go to Scott, who's on the line. Scott, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Interesting topic. I have a comment, and mostly it's about a Thanksgiving dinner. I had a discussion with an administrator at U of L Hospital that told me a number of things. And guys, I think you all were missing the PR boat here. This may be the best thing to happen for all parties, but as someone who worked in local government for 20-plus years, you're not winning any PR battles, and you may do a good thing ultimately, but at what cost is this going to be? I'm, as a citizen of the area, I'm just taken back by the lack of candor. You can't shroud it, guys, in this is business. You've got the university, which was bought by the state of Kentucky or brought into the state educational system, and through a lot of deals, ultimately gives you a hospital. I just think you're wrong, but I'll take any comments off the air.
Thanks for your call, Scott, and we'll give the panel a chance to respond.
Well, I guess I won't speak to the public relations. That's each person's judgment. But I will say this, that a responsible board of trustees at University Hospital, a responsible board of trustees at Jewish St. Mary's, a responsible board of trustees at the St. Joe system, all people from the community, like yourself, Scott, who care about the community and have a fiduciary responsibility to their organization and a responsibility to the community, looked at this merger and decided it was in the best interests of our individual organizations, but more importantly, in the best interests of the people we serve. To me, that is something that citizens like Scott should take some comfort in, that their peers in the community have spent a lot of their time looking at alternatives, trying to understand the best future and how we can continue to serve, and have made the decision that the merger is the best way for our community.
I'd like to go back to some questions of care and what will change or what will not change. Is there a specific list at this point of procedures that will not be allowed after the merger at University Hospital?
I think that list is essentially what Dr. Varga has talked about, tubal ligations. There, I think the list is going to be, and Dr. Varga is the medical doctor, so he's going to have to talk about this, maybe more specific than David and I, the non-physicians, can be. I'll let you talk to it.
Well, I mean, I would point us back to the Board of Health Forum, where Dr. Makija, who's the chair of OBGYN, I think addressed that kind of point by point. The specific procedures that won't be occurring in the at University of Louisville Hospital or Jewish Hospital or at anywhere in the system are basically three. It's tubal ligations, vasectomies, and a specific type of similar to a tubal ligation procedure called an Assure. There are lots of other procedures that may well be performed within the organization, but the indications for some of those procedures may become limited relative to what they were pre-merger. But if we want to get very simplistic around it, there are three general areas that are going to be contracted. One, they have to do with contraception. They have to do with sterilization. They have to do with abortion and euthanasia. As you look at those procedures, the state of Kentucky currently prohibits by law the performance of abortion in a hospital. State of Kentucky currently, by statute, says you can't commit euthanasia. So we basically get down to the prescription of contraceptives and the performance of sterilizations.
Isn't there a difference in definition of what technically an abortion is on the legal level and what it is under the Catholic doctrine, though? As far as extrauterine pregnancies, as far as at what point the termination could occur?
So if we want to talk about when our doctors, when a physician's sitting down making a decision with a patient, the only thing that relative to, say, for example, the management of extrauterine pregnancy, the only thing that we won't offer, which is pretty clear, is we're not going to offer a direct abortion in the treatment of that condition. Basically, that does not in any way, shape, or form limit the doctor and what they are going to do, because the definition of a direct abortion from the ERDs would say that you are intentionally terminating a pre-viable pregnancy or post-viable pregnancy.
And an extrauterine pregnancy is considered viable?
Not viable.
And so what about other medically indicated abortions? Because those still be conducted at University Hospital.
Yes, I mean, I think that's right. What we said at the Board of Health Forum.
Yes.
But if this language is still evolving, if this contract has not at least been released to the public, if this document is still being worked on, what reassurance is there that that will remain the way it is?
I think the reassurances are that we've been quoted in many public places trying to explain what Dr. Varga just explained, and it's a matter of record.
And so there's not a possibility that that will change if, say, the ERDs change later on, if that contract is renegotiated, if there are any changes to that at all?
There are provisions in the agreements that if the ERDs change and it changes, therefore, the university's ability to do the things that it believes it needs to do, that is a matter that would potentially unwind the merger. So the university has made sure that going in, it understands the things that it has contractually agreed not to do. If that changes, then there is a process described that could ultimately end up in the university being out of the merger.
All right, we're going to take another break. If you have a question or comment for our hospital merger panel, again, the number is 502-814-TALK, 814-8255, or toll-free 1-877-814-TALK. 877-814-8255. When we come back, we'll hear from Patricia and Garrett in Louisville. This is a new special on the hospital merger on WFPL. This is a WFPL news special on the hospital merger. I'm Rick Howlett with Gabe Bullard, and we're talking with Dr. James Taylor, President and CEO of University of Louisville Hospital, David Laird, President and CEO of Jewish Hospital and St. Mary's Healthcare, and Dr. Dan Varga, Chief Medical Officer at St. Joseph Health System, representing Catholic Health Initiatives. Again, our number, 502-814-TALK, 8255, or 1-877-814-TALK. That's 877-814-8255. You can email us at news at WFPL.org, send us a tweet at WFPL News, or reach us through our Facebook account. Let's go back to the phone, and Patricia is in Louisville. Patricia, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question regarding the Indigent Care funding. My understanding is that you have not provided Indigent Care funds for kids because University Hospital does not have a pediatric unit. And I understand also that you cut Indigent Care for patients from outside the county this past summer. You've talked a lot about the $320 million that you're going to be getting from CHI, as well as, I guess, future cash infusions from CHI. My question is, how much of this money from CHI is going to be used to fund Indigent Care? Will you use that money to restore the Indigent Care cuts that you put in place this past summer? Will you use this money to pay for Indigent Care funding for kids? And are you going to still continue to ask for money from the state and local governments to fund Indigent Care as you have been doing in the past?
So the let me speak first to the cuts that the listener described. Our board, understanding that our underfunding each year of the monies we get to pay for the cost of Indigent Care, that the gap between what we get and what the costs are to providing that continues to rise. And so what our board authorized about a year ago was to begin to look at the outpatient-related kinds of services that we provide to people from outside of Jefferson County. The QCCT, which we get to pay for adult uninsured people, is contractually directed to be 90% for Jefferson County adults, 10% for people from the rest of the state. We were finding that those ratios were wrong, and that because people were sending more, because providers in communities outside of Jefferson County were sending large numbers of people to us for care that was available in their own communities, that we began to be more stringent. And so it is correct that we have become more stringent in accepting patients who have the ability to, or whose communities have the ability to take care of them. So that is correct, but it should be understood in the context of what happened. The issue of the $320 million, again, those are monies, as I think Dr. Vargas described, to invest in programs initially, the $200 million in the Academic Medical Center, the rest statewide, that will address the major health needs of the people of the Commonwealth. It is not money to subsidize indigent care. I think what we hope will happen is that as we make those investments in the physicians and the caregivers and the facilities and the equipment needed to provide care across the population, that we will be able to continue serving at historic levels of indigent care. But those monies specifically are not designated for indigent care.
And specifically to the CHI commitment to indigent care, independent of the cash infusion that Jim was just describing, if you look at the St. Joseph Health System, the our largest hospital, St. Joe Hospital in Lexington, does about the same amount of indigent care as the University of Louisville Hospital does, and we do that without a quality and charity care trust fund. Our small hospitals, I'll make note of St. Joseph Martin, 50% of our patient population is self-pay in Martin. So CHI inside the St. Joe Health System right now makes a sizable contribution to indigent care right now with no specially designated funds.
And what will happen with the public funds from the city and the state? Will that be something that you'll still seek?
Yes, if we're asked to continue. I think, the issue is here every organization has to be financially viable. We are already, once you take all of the monies we get today, there still is a significant tens of millions of dollars of gap that we have to subsidize. And if we're not viable, we can't do that. So, yes, we will still ask for the same funding we get today, and we hope that we can continue to care for the populations we do, that we can continue to afford to do so, and if our financial health improves, that we can expand that, because that has been our historic commitment.
Something else I'd like to get to as well is insurance for employees of this merged entity. Will the same-sex partners of employees still be offered benefits?
I think the answer is we will continue for the year 2012 under our current health benefit programs. So St. Joe and Jewish, St. Mary's and University will continue the programs we have today. University Hospital today does provide that benefit. In 2013, when the next open enrollment happens at the end of 2012, and it'll be for all employees, there will be a benefit that will allow an employee and an individual person
plus
in their
one
to have health insurance.
And will that be provided at the same cost to the employee?
We don't know that. I mean, the goal is to make this transition from three health plans to one as easy for each employee as possible. But that's one of those things that isn't totally priced out yet. Again, we're in a – I think our motivation, of course, is to do that because we're in a very highly competitive market for the skilled people that work in hospitals. So as smart employers, we're going to want to be very competitive in our benefits.
And I had talked with Attorney General Jack Conway when he first announced that he was planning to look into this merger, a study that he's still conducting. And one question that he had brought up is, he said, as far as service changes go, possible benefits changes for employees, he said it seems odd that an entity could get bigger and do less in some regards.
I don't know what you're talking
about. In that some services wouldn't be provided, that some services would have to be moved elsewhere, that the service change, tubal ligations, et cetera, that there may be some benefits changes, that there is less being done by an entity that is getting bigger. I mean, other areas certainly will grow, but...
I think we will be able to demonstrate to our employees of the new organization that if you look at the total value of their benefits, that it will be the same or better than they get today under the three organizations. It may be slightly different, but the total value of those benefits is going to be as great or greater than they are today.
And I would take issue with the assertion that the scope of services would contract. I think one of the things that that probably is lost in this is that if so in the university's University of Louisville Department of OBGYN's affiliation agreement to also offer services at Baptist, I think that one should look at that as an expansion of services for the University of Louisville Department of OBGYN. If you limited, if you were to limit the that population of patients to the population of patients at University of Louisville Hospital who historically have had tubal ligations in a year, you're talking about 300 cases a year. I'll take any bet that anybody wants to offer that this new health system will expand services to more than 300 people statewide over the long haul. And if all we have to do is net up one, then I think we'd win that bet right there. But this the organization in general is creating an expansion of services within the Department of OBGYN to be able to offer services at other sites. But the overall access in this new health system is going to be greatly expanded.
Given some of the disputes over whether or not the UMC is public, are you still under agreement, though, that the state does have to approve this merger, that the governor's office still has the authority to nix this?
It's very clear that before we can proceed, the governor has to agree to sign the lease agreement and the academic affiliation agreement, and there's no dispute about that.
When do you expect this to all be finalized?
We expect it to be finalized when the governor is ready to finalize it.
Some documents that have gone around have, Mike O'Connell as well, the county attorney, has said indicated the end of the year or the first of next year.
We are obviously planning every day, almost I think it's fair to say hundreds of people planning every day for the first day of merger. And we are prepared to have that first day whenever the governor signs and we can close the deal. Whether that's January 1st or February 1st or March 1st, we're planning for January 1st as the first day that we could do this. But the decision as to when that first day is really not ours. It's the governor's.
And do you expect the contract language to be made public by that point before the approval?
I expect that the documents will be public record when the university, the only public organization involved in this merger, has executed them.
Before we run out of time, for our panel, we have a question from Twitter. Will there be any layoffs due to merger?
I think what we have said publicly is that it is, as Dr. Varga just said, we believe over time that this is going to create a larger workforce, a greater delivery system that will require more people than we have collectively today. Any merged organization typically has a few redundant positions. We all understand that, but those numbers are very small compared to the expansion of service and the people required to expand the service.
Okay, we are out of time, unfortunately, and we want to thank everyone for joining us, Dr. Dan Varga, Dr. James Taylor, and David Laird. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
This has been a WFPL News special on the pending hospital merger. It was produced by the WFPL News staff. Our production team is led by Brad Yost and Laura Ellis. For more information about this program, and if you want to hear it again, visit our website, wfpl.org. For Gabe Bullard, I'm Rick Hellett. Thanks for listening.